good morning and welcome to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here, the pastor of First Baptist Church in Texarkana, Texas. I'm joined by my good friend and chairman of the deacons, Dr. Sudhir J. Oprabhu, who is an obstetrician and gynecologist here in Texarkana. Well, we want to talk today what I've entitled The Emperor's New Clothes. You remember that title? It was from Hans Christian Andersen, the fairy tale writer from way back when in the 1800s. And in the story that he wrote for children, The Emperor's New Clothes, it has to do with two swindlers who arrive at the capital city of an emperor who spends lavishly on clothing at the expense of state matters. And they pose as weavers, and they're going to supply him with magnificent clothes that are invisible to those who are stupid or incompetent. And so the emperor hires them, and he sets up looms, and they go to work. And as they check on the work, nobody can see anything. All the officials, they go in, and they can't see anything, but they don't want to be considered as stupid or incompetent, because they told him, well, only the wise can see what we're doing. It is so beautiful. And so they go along with it, and then finally they have this big day where the emperor is going to show off to his townspeople his new clothes, and everybody is going along with the lie until finally a child blurts out, but the emperor is wearing nothing at all. And the people then realize that everyone has been fooled. The emperor's new clothes. Now, that is a good metaphor for what is going on in our nation, in our world, regarding transgenderism. People are buying into the lie, the obvious lie, that a male can become a female and a female can become a male. Genesis 1:27, God made them male and female. There are only two sexes. There are only two genders. You're either XY male or XX female. And we're seeing just this lie proliferate across our world, and it really has devastating consequences when it comes to children and to a society. We can't handle that kind of lie. And Sudhir, you and I have talked about the fact that this is bleeding in now to the medical community, to medical universities. And I had sent you that article about that emergency room doctor in the UK who lost his job because he said, I'm not going along with this. And in a training exercise, he said, I'm not using quote unquote preferred pronouns. If this guy's an XY male, he's going to be a he. And if it's an XX female, going to be a she. What would you have to say about that?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me on your radio show, Pastor Jeff. It's always a pleasure to hear, and I get an opportunity every day to shine and share based on the stories that you tell and the program that you have. So thank you so much for that.
Thank you.
As far as I thought it was really interesting in this article because, you know, there were basically no medical deficiencies. This was a gentleman, physician who's been practicing for 26 years, I believe, and you know, had basically no medical issues. It was a good ER doc, and the only thing that he did wrong was to not use these pronouns in a training exercise. It wasn't even with the real patient,
right?
And so he's had several courts that have agreed with that, and then also one that apparently said, hey, this guy is, you know, a good doctor and shouldn't be fired for this. And so it's interesting to follow that story for sure.
Well, what's crazy is, so this is a Christian guy, David McAreth is his name, and he said, I told them as a Christian in good conscience that I couldn't go with the preferred pronouns because that's not true. And I love this statement. He said, if we are introducing a fundamental principle of dishonesty into medical practice, that has a very big impact on the quality of our health care. Okay, so Sudhir, when you were in medical school how many years ago?
25
years ago.
You're aging me, Pastor Jeff.
But that never came up, right?
Nope.
Not at all. Just basic biology. Bill Nye, the science guy, used to teach science to kids, and he taught them in I think it was 1997, about you're either a male or female, and based on chromosomes and XY male or XX female. He has since changed that. As you've studied a lot of science to be a medical doctor, science doesn't change, does it?
Nope, not. We have discoveries that we find, but the bottom line of science does not change. No, and so when we have chromosomes that tell us XY and XX, that science has had no change at all.
And so, you know, we've talked about this on the program, Sudhir, that the medical community doesn't like to say the pro-abortion side of the medical community when life begins. Now, you know from your training, life begins at conception.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, from a scientific point of view, you know, I like to use this analogy. At the end of life, you know, we pronounce someone dead when there's no cardiac activity, there's no neural activity. And so the same thing with the beginning of life. I mean, at worst case scenario, you could say that when heartbeat happens, which is 21 days after conception, or when you start seeing neurological activity. And we can see that as early as 10 weeks, 12 weeks, we can start seeing some of that. And so, it doesn't make sense why no one gets up there on the pro-life side to say, hey, when does life begin? I can't get an answer from anyone on that.
Right. Sure. Well, I remember you told me that the chromosomal makeup of a person comes at conception. That's not something that evolves in the womb, right?
Correct. I mean, as in a male, the sperm from the male and the egg from the female, they each have a sex chromosome, and the father determines the sex of the baby. It's either an X from the father or a Y from the father, which then determines it's whether we have an XY or XX. And so it's determined at conception.
Right, and it was Henry VIII that didn't understand that. They kept executing his wives because they couldn't give him a son.
Right.
He didn't realize that's my fault.
Uh-huh.
So, and there's nothing that can control that. If a couple comes to see you and says, well, we want a boy, with modern science today, can they do that?
The only way I know of is genetic manipulation with IVF, where, you know, the egg is removed and the sperm is removed, and then they're able to isolate the X or the Y chromosome on the sperm and then join that together. But other than that, there's not anything you can take or anything along those lines.
So it's just it's a roll of the dice, so to speak. Hey, God, whatever you give me, that would be great. Well, one of the things that Sudhir, this is just an aside, but just want our listeners to know, you just became a brand new father.
Yes, I have.
You and your beautiful wife Morgan adopted a brand new baby boy, Asher. And Asher Daniel, and he is 3 months old?
4 months.
Four months old. And so this is kind of funny. So you're a baby doctor, but now the baby doctor has a baby. And so what's that been like?
Oh, that's been very interesting, just watching the development, you know. It's just been amazing how the little things, you know, that you don't study about show up and like, well, when do I feed the baby? When do I, you know?
So with your training, how much of your training gives you insight into pediatrics?
I'm responsible. We do a pediatric rotation that lasts for about 3 months in the NICU and in a pediatric clinic. So during my residency, I definitely, you know, participated in that aspect of it. But
you can't function as the baby's pediatrician.
No, I wouldn't want to do that.
Okay. Okay. And so then you get to experience what the rest of us have experienced about the
correct.
Of course, you're used to sleepless nights as a baby doctor, that kind of thing. So that's kind of old hat for you, isn't it?
Well, I remember turning to Morgan when we adopted Asher, and saying, "Man, does he eat like three hours through the night too?"
How funny! Well, that's an exciting time for sure. Well, okay, so Sudhir, in the medical community, as this fallacy that men can become women and women can become men, it's all over the news, and it's what people are talking about, and it's hitting the middle schoolers and high schoolers big time. Do you guys talk about this in the lunchroom at the hospital and things like that?
Not a ton. I haven't really been approached at this point in my medical career, as far as I've had a couple of patients who that I've had to deal with that were undergoing it, but it's not a huge phenomenon for me. So I haven't heard a lot of conversation at the lunchroom or anything like that.
I know that some of the maybe general practice doctors are hearing a lot more of that. I talked to Jennifer Peck, Dr. Nurse Mama, on American Family Radio, and she said that she never heard about that 20 years ago, and now she's hearing about it on a regular basis.
Yeah, we've had a couple, and they have centers that obviously, based on the board recommendation, state board, I have to refer them on if I have to give them a name. And so they have some centers in Dallas and things like that deal with that aspect of it.
But it used to be dealt with as a dysphoria. You have something wrong mentally.
Correct.
And I've likened it, and people get mad that are, pro-trans stuff, but I've likened it to anorexia nervosa. It's the same kind. You mentally see yourself different from you the way you actually are.
Mm-hmm.
Would you agree with that? That's a honest evaluation of how to look at it. That it is a mental disorder.
Yeah, definitely. I think I remember in residency when a man would come up to labor and delivery, and we would they would have labor symptoms or whatever, we would call security. I mean, that was, the extent of that. And so there were men posing to be in labor. And of course, we would, treat that as a definitely not something that we would entertain on labor and delivery.
Well, I was watching today a clip from a Matt Walsh speech, and then he was giving people an opportunity to go to the microphone to ask him questions. And Matt Walsh is the guy that produced What Is a Woman, where he went across talking to doctors and professors, asking, like, this one guy, you teach women's studies, well, can you define woman for me? And the guy couldn't do it, and he got mad that he was being asked that question. Seems like a pretty basic mm-hmm. question. The newest Supreme Court justice was asked, can you define a woman? I can't define a woman, I'm not a biologist, which at least she was connecting it to biology, because I think what sixth grade biology will teach you what a woman is.
Right.
But he had a question from a man that was thinking he was a woman, looked like a woman, a sick looking woman. But this person was an EMT. And so this person was trying to make the case for, you can't, it's too complicated to define the word woman. And he said to him, you're an EMT. Yes. So if you get called to a medical emergency and the person is a biological male, he has all the male parts, and he says to you, I think I'm having a miscarriage. He says to this EMT, do you check him for a miscarriage? Long pause. And then this person says, well, no, which is, I mean, obviously you wouldn't do
right.
that. And so there's no doctor on the planet that would say, well, yeah, we better check them for that.
Correct.
So, it floors me that the medical community is not the one standing up and saying, this is just wrong. This is just fallacy. The emperor has no clothes. Let's call a spade a spade. But they're not doing that because of political pressure, and the culture is pushing hard on the medical community.
There's also a little bit of financial incentive, yes, I believe, as well.
Yes, yes, for sure. And we'll talk more about that when we come back. Well, you're listening to Real Truth for Today, and I'm your host, Pastor Jeff Shreve. I'm talking to my good friend, Dr. Sudhir J. Opperbu, a gynecologist and obstetrician here in the Texarkana area. His patients call him Dr. J. It just makes it easier. And we're talking about transgenderism. Don't go away. Welcome back to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here, along with my good friend, Dr. Sudhir J. Opperbu, a gynecologist and obstetrician here in the Texarkana area. And we're talking about the emperor's new clothes. Now, that was a short story by Hans Christian Andersen many, many years ago, but that phrase is used as an idiom. It lets people know that something widely accepted as true or professed as being praiseworthy due to an unwillingness of the general population to criticize it or go against popular opinion. I think that is an apt description of what's going on in this fallacy known as transgenderism that is sweeping across our nation, sweeping across the world. Sudhir, we had a recent news item where a trans contestant won the Miss Universe Netherlands competition, a 22-year-old biological male, and he got first, and the second place was a beautiful girl, biological female, but this guy pretending to be a girl, he won, and now he's going to compete in the Miss Universe pageant in El Salvador. It's just insane. I had sent you an article about the CDC giving guidelines for trans people to chest feed their babies. I mean, it's just unbelievable. Now, CDC, the Center for Disease Control, it has become the Center for Deception Control. It's not operating in reality. If any place, any government entity ought to be rooted and grounded in biological science and truth, should be the Centers for Disease Control. What do you make of that, Sudhir, about biological men taking drugs to breastfeed, or they don't call it breastfeed because a man doesn't have breasts, so to chest feed his child?
Yeah, I was shocked. I wanted to thank my friends at American Association of Pro-Life Obstetrician Gynecologists and American College of Pediatrics for helping me kind of organize some of my thoughts, and then several colleagues here who I shared with, and I got the same response from everybody that I went through when I first heard about this. You know, as I present the situation, I get a blank stare back at me, just absolute shock, and then they process through all what I just said, what you just said, and then come back with, you know, is that really true? I mean, they really did that? And so I went and looked, you know, as a practicing obstetrician, gynecologist, and a clinician, I went and looked at the CDC website at the spot where it was, and they say, you know, can transgender patients breastfeed? The answer is yes, period. So no disclaimer or anything like that. It's just yes. And then they go on to quote a study that I pulled up, and it was called, it's a clinical protocol. So it's not a study. It's just a clinical protocol, lactation care for LGBTQ patients, plus patients is kind of the protocol associated with it. And so as I read through it, you know, it's a 7-page protocol. Not a lot of science in that protocol at all. And it takes about halfway through the article to get to any sort of science. And they quote that there was one patient now, who actually was able to produce breast milk, and they used a drug called domperidone, not the champagne, domperidone, to induce lactation. I was really shocked at this. You know, when I was in medical school, we were taught that the gold standard of studies that we use is a randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled trial, because then you can't mess with the data in any way. And so those are the things that we use to make these recommendations. I remember being told in medical school, hey, the thing that separates you from witch doctors and old wives' tales is the data behind the science behind medicine. And so really stick with that. And the people that I have the privilege of mentoring and teaching, I try to pass that same thought process through, because they come to us as clinicians because we're able to get that data and stand behind something. And so these randomized double-blind placebo-controlled trials are important in figuring out, because you really can't manipulate it, but then you can't just take like one area. Like if I was to just do a study in Texarkana, well, people in Alaska and Florida may be different. And so you need like a multi-center. And then to make nationwide recommendations, you actually get a meta-analysis of all these studies, and then you put that together, and that's how you come up with recommendations that we stand on.
And that deals with the drug that you're trying to say, does this work or not work?
It deals with any sort of recommendations. I mean, you know, at all from a clinical point of view. And so, you know, the drugs themselves have various regulations that they go through the FDA, but these are just like, hey, you know, you should do this for your heart. You know, you should do
so
this.
So protocols and things like that.
And so for a center, for like an organization to give recommendations, usually they rely on these multi-center, you know, numerous patients, not just in one area, all over the United States, to be able to say, okay, this is a good thing to do, or hey, let's not do this, you know, let's do something different. And so there's a lot of science behind it. This had one patient, one patient. And so you're making recommendations for the United States population of 331 million people. Based on one case. Just incredible. And so then, you know, then you think about, well, why is that a big deal? You know, so we get some, you know, patients who can breastfeed or chest feed. You know, why is that a big deal? Well, the problem is there's a second patient here, the baby, who can't talk. And so now, I mean, are we, you know, how do you look at that? So just as a clinician, I'm not a researcher. I've not done any research other than residency. So just as a clinician, I mean, I just, some of these thoughts just popped into my mind is, I mean, what is the composition of the milk? Is the composition the same in a woman, biological woman, versus a man? And I'm not, that hadn't been studied. We don't know what type of composition it is. Is it nutritionally adequate for the baby? You know, is there enough nutrients being produced, or is this something totally different for the baby? And, you know, does the male mammary glands filter the same way as the female mammary glands? And why is that important? You know, you have toxins in your body. You take drugs, especially patients that are transgender. They have high hormone levels of estrogen, progesterone, and then usually they use a drug called domperidone, which we'll get to in a second, that, you know, the body filtrates. And so the baby doesn't get, because the baby's smaller, doesn't get the same concentration of these chemicals that an adult would. And so there's a filtration mechanism already in place that God has designed. Well, is that the same for males? I mean, we don't know. How much of it gets across, you know, how much of it.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, it's one of those things, who studies that? Because it's ridiculous.
Right. Yeah. And that was the response I got back from a lot of the clinicians. What? I hadn't even thought of that, you know. And then, you know, the amazing part of breastfeeding is that the milk itself changes as the baby is growing and has different nutritional needs. For example, composition of a preterm mom breastfeeding, the milk is different than the composition of a term mom's breast milk. And so just as the baby is growing and there's signals that are being sent, apparently, that we don't know of how, you know, how the body's producing this milk that the baby needs exactly. And does that happen with you know, males? So there's a lot of questions just based on the baby's nutritional needs itself. And then we get to the really bad part, which is this domperidone that, you know, the CDC doesn't make any qualifications about. They just point to this paper. And the paper, you know, I have a little quote from it. It's on Domperidone has the strongest evidence for successful lactation promotion, and the only published case report of successful induced lactation is in a transgender woman who used this medication. It is not FDA approved for use in the United States. That's what the paper says. So I said, well, let me look at the FDA and see what they say. Mm-hmm. So this is what the FDA says about it. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration has issued a warning recommendations that domperidone not be used off-label to increase milk production in breastfeeding patients due to safety concerns related to cardiac arrhythmias, cardiac arrest, and sudden death. Mm-hmm. So we're giving super physiological doses. And the other part about domperidone is that it's only available, like I can't write a prescription for it and give it to you and you can go get it. Mm-hmm. It's only available to an FDA investigational drug protocol. There has to be special things that hoops you have to jump through to even get the drug. So I assume most of it's being gotten elsewhere, not through the FDA. So you've got these super physiological levels of this drug that potentially could go across to the baby and cause, cardiac death. Mm-hmm. And up to this point, the FDA said, don't use this. Mm-hmm. A pretty strong no to me as an obstetrician, and I don't use this drug for
females.
Yeah, for females.
Yeah.
But we're going to use it, and we're going to give it to the baby based on one case report, and this is okayed by the CDC.
So, Sudhir, when you go down the road in medicine of that which you know is false, bad results from that.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't just, okay, well, we'll just go with your preferred pronouns. It doesn't stop there. And then it starts with, then there are drugs. And yeah, you can, okay, you're a little biological male, 10 years old. We're going to give you drugs to make you a female. With some of those drugs, they chemically castrate a little boy. So if I'm 10 years old and I take these drugs and then I come out of the ether and say, hey, wait a minute, I was wrong. I was 10. Yeah. What did I know? There's no reversing that.
Not the years that you've gone through. Yeah. It was a wake up call for me because, one of the things that when I went into medicine, the Hippocratic Oath says, first thing is do no harm. I mean, we learned that straight out of, first year, day of medical school, right? I mean, it's, first don't do any harm and then help when you can. And in this situation, I mean, it just seems to be, we're just getting thrust in harm's way, mm-hmm. of people forcing medical providers to do things that are going to cause harm for them, for their baby, for society as a generality. Mm-hmm. It's a wake-up call for our medical society.
Okay, so when doctors perform abortions, they do it, I don't think they're just beating the drum that says, I think this is a good thing. They're doing it for money. I mean, that's the driving force, is I make a lot of money doing that. I think you told me you could make more money doing abortions than you could delivering babies.
Right. I couldn't sleep at night, but yeah, I think right. That was your response.
Yeah. And when doctors perform transgender surgeries, in one hospital, they revealed on a, kind of a hidden camera thing, they were telling their surgeons, hey, we can make a lot of money doing this. We're going to do this now. And that they've since had to shut down. I think it was Vanderbilt Hospital. But it was all about money. Mm-hmm. And I have said before, Sudhir, on this program, that the love of money, as the scripture says, is a root of all sorts of evil. And I think what we're seeing is, it's like, well, what is fueling all this lunacy? It's the love of money.
Yeah.
Because it makes no sense for the medical community to not just stand up and say, this is ridiculous. I mean, biology is biology. You may not like it, but you can't change it. Yeah. There's the law of gravity. Well, I don't like the law of gravity, so I'm going to start jumping off 10-story buildings. Well, you can do that if you want, but you're going to hit the ground because you don't break the law of gravity. You're broken on it.
Yeah. I think there are two components to this. One is, like you said, the motivation of money, because the rest of that verse says some people eager for money have wandered away from faith and have pierced themselves, with many griefs. And I think that's where we're kind of headed, is many griefs, mm-hmm. that are going to come out of this. And it's not a good thing overall for society. But there is, there's areas where you can make easy money as a provider. And mm-hmm. so consequently, you know, if you're not grounded and if you're not thinking about, hey, I've got to do this for society and for my patients,
right.
and you're not grounded on God's word, you're going to start looking for those areas. So that's one area. And then the other one is, you know, the patient themselves and the pathway of sin is very similar. You know, Eve said, or this, Satan came to Eve and said, you know, did God really say and, mm-hmm. and deceived him? I think that's what happens in the brain is, hey, I, you know, God didn't really say I could be a man or I could be a woman. I mean, I should be a man. And, mm-hmm. and then it progresses on to the lie, the bold faced lie of, you know, God's holding out on me. You mm-hmm. know, I need to be somebody different. I need to change myself, for that. And so, I think you've got those two things that are playing, for that, there may be other motives, but those are the two things that I've seen mm-hmm. really play into that.
Well, it is really disheartening to see this this bleed into universities and into the sciences, into medicine. When we come back, we're going to play a clip about a professor in San Antonio that lost his job. He got fired. He'd been teaching as an adjunct professor at a community college, and he got fired for teaching biology. Mm. To teaching it's only male or female. It's based on chromosomes. This idea that gender is separate from biological sex is ridiculous. That's just somebody making that up. That's just the emperor's new clothes are not new. They're no clothes, and there's no truth in that. Yeah. Well, you're listening to Real Truth for Today, and I'm your host, Pastor Jeff Shreve, and we're talking to Dr. Sudhir J. Oprabhu, gynecologist and obstetrician. We're talking about transgenderism. And listen, if you know someone, if you yourself or you know someone who's struggling with this, it is a mental problem. It's not a physiological problem. It is a mental problem, and it is a war against the truth of how God made us. It's the ultimate in your face, God. You're not going to tell me who I am. I'm going to tell you who I am, and it's straight out of Romans 1. Woe to those who call evil good and good evil, as Isaiah says. Hey, we'll be right back. Welcome back to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here, along with Dr. Sudhir J. Oprabhu. We're talking about the issue of transgenderism under the title of The Emperor's New Clothes. Now, if you know that famous little folk tale, the Emperor's New Clothes were no clothes at all. And the people didn't want to act like they were not in the know, or, hey, I can't be a rube, so I got to go along with it. I guess everybody's seeing this, so I got to go along with it. And Sudhir, we're seeing that in our society where if you're not, you don't want to be called a transphobe or a homophobe or some other kind of phobe, so you got to go along with it. And you got to, consensus says that the climate is, you know, the world is getting hotter and hotter and climate change is real, and that's what consensus says. Well, science is not about consensus, it's about facts. And so, but I don't want to be in that small marginalized group, so I better go along with the crowd. And why is that so deadly when it comes to medicine?
It's because medicine's not about popular opinion. I mean, you know, I think medicine works best when you deal with a problem and you deal with it in a way that we have dealt with in the past. It's been proven. There's a lot of data behind it. And when we just go with the popular opinion, like politics, like the CDC recommendations here, it just takes the trust out of people. Mm-hmm. You don't know where to go as a provider, as a clinician. And there's just so many ramifications to this coming on and playing politics with medicine. It's just not good.
Right. The truth sets you free. Lies are not going to help anybody. And we are propagating lies to young people now. These aren't necessarily 30-year-olds that, you know, I mean, the Bruce Jenner thing. Well, if he wants to wreck his life, that's his choice. But don't wreck a 10-year-old's life, because they can't make lifetime decisions at 10. Nobody can. And that's a deadly cocktail for sure. Well, we're going to open the phone lines 888-589-8840. That's 888-589-8840. If you have a question for us today, for Dr. Jay, I know that he'd be happy to answer those as it relates to this issue of transgenderism. And listen, we always on this program, we talk about ideology and we're hard on the truth. But when it comes to the person, a person caught up in this, we care about that person and we're not hardline on that person. We want to help the person, but you don't ever help a person by telling them a lie. You have to tell them the truth. You know, Dr. Jay, you have no doubt seen women come in with cervical cancer. That's not something they want to hear.
Correct.
But you have to tell them the truth. If they have it, then you have to deal with it. You can't just put on blinders and say, well, this will go away and I'm just going to tell you you're fine.
Correct.
So very, very important to operate in the truth. And what we're seeing today is, you know, this push that everybody get on board with this false ideology. And if you don't, then you are potentially going to lose your job. This is what happened to a biology professor in San Antonio.
A Texas professor claims he was fired after university leaders found his teachings too religious. Dr. Johnson Varkey and his attorneys at First Liberty Institute sent a letter to St. Philip's College in San Antonio, Texas, charging that his firing was illegal. CBN's Billy Hallowell sat down with Dr. Varkey to learn more about why he's fighting back.
As a biology professor for the past 20 years, Dr. Johnson Varkey consistently taught the same scientific facts about the human reproductive system without any problems. But he says that recently changed when he received a notice of dismissal.
I was surprised and I was shocked because, you know, I never expected for such a letter from or such an email from the school, because I've been teaching that for that school for the last 20 years and without any complaints.
Dr. Varkey believes his lessons on human biology and sex being determined by chromosomes X and Y sparked complaints which led to his dismissal.
On the 12th of January, I received an email from the vice president of the school that they are doing an ethic violation investigation on me. 2 weeks after the first email, I received another email with a letter of termination.
Dr. Varkey says although he asked about complaints, he received no response from HR and didn't get a chance to defend himself before his firing.
When I got the letter of termination, what the VP mentioned was that some of the complaints were offensive to the homosexuals and transgender. So I presume and I assume that very possible it is based on human reproductive system, which I taught in November. When I taught this class, four of my students just walked out.
First Liberty attorney Keisha Russell believes Dr. Varkey's case likely has much to do with current cultural trends.
When I saw the termination letter and I see that the university is accusing him of religious preaching, I think that what they don't understand is even if he was, they still can't fire him for saying something that he believes to be true.
Russell says her client's speech was based on his sincerely held beliefs and ethical integrity and is protected under the First Amendment.
Well, that is a doctor or a professor in San Antonio losing his job because he is teaching basic biology. That's what you were taught in middle school, high school, and medical
Correct.
School.
Exactly.
And I hope they're still teaching that today. I don't know how you can learn medicine without learning about the reproductive Correct. System and chromosomes. Well, we're going to the phone lines, 888-589-8840. That's 888-589-8840. And we'd love to hear from you. We have Julie on the line from Illinois. Julie, welcome to the program.
Hi, yes, thanks so much. I really liked what you had to say about how medicine works best when it's based on facts. Mm-hmm. And I have two questions. One is about irreversible surgeries done on intersex children at birth and whether that's factually based. And two, should a 10-year-old victim of rape have to carry a baby to term?
All right, very good, Julie. So Sudhir, in your experience, have you ever had an intersex birth?
I have not.
Okay, how often does that happen?
Extremely rare. I don't know the numbers off the top of my head, but it's extremely rare for that to happen.
Okay, in your training, did they ever say anything about what you're supposed to do in if that happens? How do doctors go about that?
It's usually handled at the tertiary centers. Usually there's a someone who's trained to deal with that aspect of it. Mm-hmm. For us, we'll usually refer them on to tertiary care if that happens. But like I said, I've not seen it.
Okay, so what exactly does that mean? When people talk about intersex, that means they have, what's their chromosomal makeup?
I don't know. It's not a medical diagnosis.
So, oh, it's not?
Okay. No, there's several different types, I think, that fall into that. Uh-huh. But as far as just saying intersex, it's not a medical diagnosis. I don't know what exactly that means.
Okay. The second question. So, Julie, here's the thing. So, if a 10-year-old gets raped, a horrible, horrible thing, but it's not the fault of the baby who is a person inside the womb, and so to abort that baby that's abortion is murder. So if something bad happens to you, that doesn't give me the right to go murder your mother or murder your child. It's just the two different people.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, it's really interesting to me. I mean, I hope whoever did it gets caught and put in jail. I mean, I hope we punish the right person. But it's always interesting because nowhere else in medicine do we necessarily induce a emotional trauma that this 10-year-old is going to have to live with the rest of their life to treat a problem that, you know, such as rape. It just doesn't make sense to do that from a medical point of view. And so it's just...
Right. It's kind of like the phrase, two wrongs don't make a right. So as bad as that is, and it's horrible. And I have two granddaughters. One has just turned 13. The other's getting ready to turn 8. And if something like that happened, it would be horrific beyond imagination. But we would not say, well, this is what we need to just terminate this and remove this. Because we've known people. James Robinson, who's a great preacher of the gospel, and he could have very easily been aborted. His mother was sexually assaulted. I forget how the things came about, but she didn't. She had him, and he's thankful every day that my mother didn't abort me.
Yeah, I'm always curious whether in today's world whether Jesus would have made it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Julie, any other comments or questions about that?
No, just that a 10-year-old should be allowed to become a mother, but should not be able to, for instance, once they've begun puberty, take puberty blocking, which is a reversible treatment.
Okay. Anything to say about that?
I think that's something that society definitely needs to answer. My opinion, not as a medical doctor, is, of course, that, you know, I mean, we don't allow 10-year-olds to drive. We don't, you know, there's a lot of decision-making process that they, you know, they may want to change later. And although it's touted as reversible, from the medicine side of it, I don't know how it's reversible. You know, there's the longer you take it, that time doesn't go back. I mean, you can't go back and get those changes back.
No. I think that we just need to say, hey, you know, if you're an adult and you want to do something, you want to have body parts removed or whatever, as horrible as that is you're going to wish you hadn't done that. Sometime you're going to come to your senses, hopefully. But to do that for a 10-year-old when they can't make decisions in a broad way to really understand what life is all about, that is devastating. So thank you for calling in, Julie. We have Paul also on the line from Illinois. Paul, or Paul, maybe. Is it Paul or Paul?
Yeah, hey. God's day to you and everybody. God bless you and yours. Appreciate you taking my call. The strangest thing was I was pushing redial on another number. Got you guys. I thought, well, apparently I need to, you know, speak my mind here because this thing, of course, I haven't been listening. So this is probably one of the biggest evils and lie of the devil, because we know he's a liar from the beginning, Jesus said, and the father of lies, mm-hmm. is, you know, it's like I told your call screener, I said, it's pretty simple, you know, but, you know, everybody wants to make a big deal about it and do what they want to do and ruin people's lives. They don't care. You know, it's all about money and control with the enemy, right? The Holy Spirit leads us. The devil tries to control us. But here's the thing I wanted to say. I told your call screener, I said, in the beginning, on the sixth day, he created man and woman. But, yeah, we have an enemy. So if you're not filled with the Holy Spirit, you don't have the power over the enemy, the problem. So, I don't know, like I said, what anybody else has been saying, but that's just what come to my spirit.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that, and you're exactly right. It's not complicated. It's very simple. God made them male and female, and God is the one who determines who we are, and life goes so much better when you don't fight God, but when you say, yes, Lord, and you yield yourself to God. So I appreciate your comment. We have Cedric on the line from Baton Rouge. Cedric, welcome to Real Truth for Today.
How you doing, sir? Cedric. My mother said Cedric.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that.
Don't worry about that, sir.
Yes.
I want to know, what does that make Michael LaVon Robinson? What does make Michael LaVon Robinson?
I'm not following.
Michael LaVon Robinson was the first queen for 8 years. That's Michelle LaVon Robinson.
Okay.
That's Michelle Obama.
Yes. I don't know about that, Cedric. I've seen some things on the internet about Sudeiritz that Michelle Obama was a man.
Oh,
that's what some have said. And so, I don't know. I would love to see pictures of her as a young child, as her pregnant, and those kinds of things. I think that would sure answer a lot of questions that people have brought up about that. And I haven't seen any. Have you seen any, Cedric?
They tell you, they read it out. It's a man. That's the way it is.
Well, we'll have to wait and see on that. I don't know for sure, but I appreciate you calling in. Appreciate you listening to the program. Sudhir, thank you for being my guest today. Thank you for your wisdom and insight, and God bless you. I know you got a full day of seeing patients, and you're doing a great work, and I appreciate you so much. Well, thanks for listening to Real Truth for Today, and you may have a friend, a neighbor, a loved one who needs to hear the truth concerning transgenderism. I would just encourage you to share this program with them, AFR.net, Real Truth for Today, and you can listen to any of the programs that are on there, and hopefully they're a blessing to you. Go out today, shine for Christ, and share what great things the Lord has done for you, and God will use you as His witness. God bless you.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.